Well, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. I'm really excited because my guest is Fiona Fine. She is an author, speaker, and publisher, and she's growing a movement for women who want to live and love on their terms. But all you guys listening, just pay attention because this is not a book for women. It's a book about women, and a lot of you men out there could learn a lot. Welcome to this program, Fiona Fine.
Welcome. Thank you, Diana. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Your book, your online book, and before we do part two, I may get an actual copy. I'm hoping, but I read the whole thing online, and I want to let you listeners know that Fiona Fine will send you a free online book if you go to www.babeintotalcontrolofherself.com. And so we get the acronym BITCH. And so, Fiona, why did you decide to write this book, Bitch? And why now in your life? And you're really adamant about advocating for and to women. Can you give us a little background about what motivated you?
You know, the why was that the timing just came about in my life that I guess maturity-wise, I finally stepped into my own bitch, and I mean being in total control of herself. But my background and upbringing has been about 30 years in a man's world of engineering. Then yeah. I went into IT and finally into what I affectionately call the ball-busting world of recruiting, corporate recruiting. Mm-hmm. And so I'd taken for granted that I knew how a man's mind worked, yet because I'd been so long in a man's world, I really had lost or never found the woman part of me, the femininity part of me that was deep inside my core. And so I've lived in my masculine, and I was called bitch a tremendous amount, you know, to my face, behind the scenes, whatever, it didn't matter. But being in a man's world, that's sort of how I was, how a lot of strong, successful women are deemed. And bitch, or babe in total control of herself, really is my way of encouraging myself to step into all of my greatness and my uniqueness, and by really coming into my own, both sides, both the masculine, as we might call it, and the feminine side of myself. And it was just time. I mean, the topics that I had been grappling with in the last couple of years, and the reason I came out of semi-retirement, it's culminating in bitch, and using that as an empowerment piece as opposed to how the world has sort of pointed its finger at me and other women.
I really, you come from this background of engineering, and so your masculine side in Jungian terms, that would be your animus.
Yeah.
The anima is the female side, of course. So your masculine side was very well developed. You knew how men thought. When you graduated from engineering school, you were in a class of how many? And there were only 35 women? How many?
We look back. There was about 35 of us in at least 350. I mean, we were just, you know, we weren't represented. Still, as a lot of, you know, what I would call engineering, math, and sciences are not still represented.
That's true.
So, you know, lots has changed, really, and yet still, some of it internally in ourselves as women stays the same, and how we advocate for each other. And you asked me how this came about. Mm-hmm. I had actually gone into semi-retirement. It wasn't my first time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I affectionately say, you know, I was getting kind of bored. I've lived a spectacular life. It hasn't been perfect. It hasn't been easy. Simple maybe, but not easy. And I was getting a little bored, and 2020 hindsight, I probably could have come out and learned the game of golf, but I really felt this huge calling to really start to play with women and to, you know, really find out how we're going to take what everything that has come about in the last, 25, 50 years, and how we're going to take that to the next level, and how we're going to inspire each other. And so Bitch is sort of the book that got written from all of that, all of my own life lessons and coaching other women in dating and relationships and in the trenches, very much in the trenches, not, from your expertise of research and your practice. So that's why it's great to be here and being able to talk to you.
And by the way, for a former engineer, you are a gorgeous redhead. I haven't met you yet in person. I hope that day will come. But
yes.
But I did see the photo that you sent, and you're really very pretty.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And so it must have been hard, though, when you were working as an engineer to be called a bitch. I mean, you have a very strong masculine side. I'll self-disclose a little bit. I never was an engineer. I'm not at all quantitative. I have other skills, but I'm not quantitative. But I was always fiercely independent, and when I was just 24, I went around the world alone for 9 months. And as a young blue-eyed blonde girl, that was rather brave and bold, and it really gave me additional confidence, and I tapped into my intuition. Do I want to talk to this man who seems to be interested in me or not? And so I was very independent, and that one reason I didn't marry until I was 30 is that a lot of men were intimidated by that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, my independence has served me well, my self-confidence through the years. But I can remember, I do remember even one boyfriend saying, "You're not a very feminine, soft person." And I thought I was very feminine, but
in that moment, you're like, what? Huh? I am, actually.
Exactly.
I have to share, I got called bossy yesterday. And of course, we all know Ban the Bossy. And all I was doing was helping somebody take junipers out of their garden.
Oh, my goodness.
And yes, and really, during my sort of first semi-retirement, I started working in garden design and everything. So, I felt that I was coming from a relative place yesterday of, confidence that I knew what a juniper bush was, blah, blah, blah. And afterwards I got, you were pretty bossy about how this was going to happen. I'm like, still now, okay. Whereas affectionately, if it's between me and my partner and he calls me a bitch, of course I just go, yes, I am. And he takes it very well.
Well, see, you have managed to sustain your sense of humor. And you talk about that, actually. Reclaim your own femininity and sassiness without sacrificing your sense of humor.
Oh, and I know, but honestly, that's probably the piece. When I talk about my femininity, I don't necessarily, I mean, the joke is that I look kind of like the girl next door, and then I open my mouth and out comes George Clooney. And and so, there's this real disconnect between me until I open my mouth, and of course the engineer shows up, and I swear and cuss and all this sort of stuff. And yet growing up, I had two very bright, well-educated parents, and I swear I had a charmed childhood. And it, over the years, I learned, I had to dumb it down to work in a man's field, honestly. I really did. Mm-hmm. Brains times beauty is a constant, and they just could not handle that the constant might have to change. And I really think that needs to change for women and about women. But at the same time, the other piece is I never even had a sense of humor until the last 5 to 10 years. It just wasn't something I even considered was going to help me get through life. And the whole honey versus, you catch more bees with honey. I didn't even understand what people were talking about. So really, to be fair, I really did have a very strong inner bitchness like the inner bitch that could be intolerant. And that's why I really needed to reframe it, to find the sass, to find the fun, to look at it from a lightness and a fun part as opposed to from a cranky point of view.
That is fascinating. And, but I'm even surprised that you developed your sense of humor only in the last 5 years. But maybe you just had to kind of keep it down because of working in this men's world. So let's, you also talk about allowing growth without losing yourself. That's really important. And I think a lot of women are looking for an integrated self. And I had one client say, you know, I was a woman in pieces when I wanted to be a woman at peace.
Yes. So
to integrate.
That's profound, yeah.
Yeah, to integrate one's, allowing growth without losing oneself. Would you elaborate on that?
Well, you know, it kind of goes back to that, what I think is somewhat ridiculous line in Jerry Maguire, which is, you complete me.
I think it's really ridiculous, too.
I mean, I could pontificate long and loud on that.
Yeah.
And I do.
Well, do a little bit here on this program. That would be fine.
Well, I do have to a little bit, because when I, you know, I've had a coaching practice, originally it was in career coaching because of the recruiting, and it was in careers and outplacement. And how I got into the dating side of things, other than, you know, we'll talk maybe at some point about my history in dating and how I ended up doing that.
Yeah, but I think we will, possibly in part two, if we don't get to it today. Part two, by the way, everybody, is going to be June the 10th.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was doing this coaching, and I had already founded the site, How to Put the Fun Back into Dating.com, mm-hmm. and yet I was bumping into a lot of women, and I was starting to build up a little bit of, here you go, the inner bitch intolerance to women saying to me, but I just want a man. Mm-hmm. You know, I just need a man. Where is he already? I've been dating for, you know, 20 years or something. Where is he? And the mm-hmm. panic that was in their voice and the goal-oriented drive that once he showed up, once he'd chosen them, which is another rant, once he'd chosen them and they had formed, you know, what was going to, quote, be the one for her, that it was going to be not necessarily smooth sailing, but that she had a checkbox that, you know, that was a piece of the goal that she is driven to. And, of course, that's how we lose ourselves, in my opinion. When I'm driving hard to a goal, I quite often have to remind myself, or the universe will, do I really, really want it? And is it showing up the way I want and desire it and need it for me to actually be all that I can be? You know, we want careers. We want children. We want it all. We would like it all at once. And, of course, that is exhausting and overwhelming.
Of course
so,
it is.
You know, looking for a man to complete us is A, deferring to somebody who is not capable of it, and B, it's just flat out wrong. It's going to blow up.
I think that this fits in very well with this conversation. There's a real distinction between want and need, and ideally, a woman should look at a man that she's getting serious about or is serious about, and she ought to be able to say, I want you even more than I need you.
Yeah.
I can live without you, but by golly, I can live much better with you.
And it'll be a hell of a lot more fun if mm-hmm. we're matched well, you know, as opposed to we're just on a contract to make babies and, you know, in 7 years, that contract's probably going to disappear the hard way.
Yes. When we talk about allowing growth without losing oneself, there is David Snarch, PhD. Mm-hmm. He's got sort of an unusual last name, but he says some very important things, and he's well respected in the therapeutic community. And so I've done some weekend workshops with him and so on. He's written a really good book called Passionate Marriage. Mm. So I've been influenced by him, and so that I'm confident that I can help clients develop resilience and stand up for themselves. And so that effort will create a stronger individual, one who can deal with a partner with more integrity and authenticity. Mm-hmm. And I'll just give you and our listeners a case, an example. The wife said, I used to think Ken's job was to take care of me by knowing how I felt, and that is an idea embedded in the culture. And she said, now I'm not dumping anything on him. I have worked my side of the issue. As a result, yeah, I feel loved, and I want to move toward him. So this is self-differentiation in action. To differentiate, mm-hmm, to stand on your own two feet, to self-soothe. And you can be a much more interesting partner and sexier partner, too, if you can
and you
be.
You can create, mm-hmm, amazing things when you're both conscious about what works as an individual. I think I shared with you the infinity sign when you take,
yes,
two complete individuals who are growing as each, you know, individually, but when you mesh them gracefully together like cogs in a wheel, oh my gosh, what you can create is so much bigger. And honestly, I could have done with you in my first marriage. Really? Because,
uh-huh,
my guy, my ex, said, if I can't change you, how can I change the world? And I thought, wow, it's not your job to change me. I'm
really
not focused.
I mean, the whole thing is, You can't fix the ones you love or the one you love. All you can do is fix yourself.
And love them as they're working themselves. Yeah.
Of
and
course.
And have fun. Oh, my God, having fun. I swear sometimes, mm-hmm, we're missing the whole point of the journey. And honestly, it comes from experience. I really thought there was a destination as,
uh-huh,
opposed to the journey. And I know there's a ton of men and women that go, no, it's all about the journey. I had to learn that the hard way. So,
well, and that, we're going to talk a little bit just down the line here about orgasms, but I counsel, I've had over the years many anorgasmic, or I prefer the term pre-orgasmic women, because women can learn to have orgasms, but I often say, don't focus on the destination, i.e. the orgasm, but the journey, and enjoying the journey, the pleasures of it,
yeah,
which is maybe a good way to move into. You, I really loved this part of your book, The Courtesan Mindset, and I did see that movie from 1998.
Oh, yeah,
what
it
is
was
the name
gorgeous.
Of it again?
Dangerous Beauty.
Yes, and Michelle, wasn't it? Michelle Pfeiffer was in it?
No, but a woman that looked like that, and her mother was her mother. Oh, I'm drawing a blank.
Her mother
now.
Was a fake.
Jacqueline
Bisset, I think.
Yes.
Anyway,
think
her
so.
Mother. The story was her mother had been and she was still a beauty, but an older, mm-hmm, beauty, a,
yeah,
really famous courtesan, and she was coaching her daughter. And her daughter became even more renowned.
Yeah.
And this was in Venice in maybe the 1600s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And don't forget, the original, mm-hmm, the woman who plays the young courtesan, the daughter, remember, what she really wanted is she wanted equality with men. She wanted,
yes,
what I would call, you know, her innate power. She didn't want to just, quote, just get married and lose her voice and to bring up kids, because back then they didn't, you know, women who were wives had no power, had no freedoms, had no voice. The courtesans had it because of what they brought to the table.
Well, and they were also educated, and most women in those days were not.
Yeah.
And remember, yeah, the younger daughter courtesan, she was a brilliant poet, and she would, mm-hmm, recite poetry sort of impromptu.
Mm-hmm. And she could one up most men in most endeavors that were traditionally male oriented.
Yes.
Oh,
and
no,
I
was
like
very
what you
attractive to me.
Yes, of course. I like what you say that the courtesan mindset is the merging of the courtesan and the feminist.
Mm-hmm.
Feminist mindsets both.
Mm-hmm. And it is almost what I would call a modern day feminism. Because people ask me, am I a feminist? And I know how hard my predecessors, I'm in my early 50s, and I know how hard some of, you know, the real makers of, and the feminists, the older feminists, I'll call it, than I am, how hard they have fought to even allow me the lifestyle that I live, and how I fought for younger versions of me. We at some level, I think we've kind of lost that feminine presence, that feminine internal nurturing of ourselves, not just of the world, but so many of us women skate on the edge of greatness, but we refuse to put on our own oxygen masks first.
Oh.
Always putting them on our families and our communities, and we're gasping for breath.
Yes. I want to share with you all, there's a feminist named Vivian Gornick, and I'm just going to share a little bit of what she said, what independence has come to mean to me. So after decades, she was fighting on the front lines of feminism, and so here she is at 65, and she's holding a coffee cup and staring out the window at the same New York street she's lived on for 25 years, alone. And in pondering this solitude, she writes, "The reality was I was not alone, or I was alone, not because of my politics, but because I did not know how to live in a decent way with another human being.
Mm-hmm.
In the name of equality, I tormented every man who'd ever loved me until he left me. I called them on everything, never let anything go, held them up to accountability in ways that, wearied us both. There was, of course, more than a grain of truth in everything I said, but those grains, no matter how numerous, need not have become the sandpile that crushed the life out of love."
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't that a profound...
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yes. And here she is alone at 65, rather sad. And, my goodness, how eloquent.
Mm-hmm.
And it
have to happen. I think she would look back and go, if there had been some sort of understanding of what she was giving up, and the harmonization that we can of our innate, you know, it's getting a bad rap, femininity and things like that, but our innate, and I'll go back to the courtesan, our sass, our inner beauty, our confidence, our self-esteem as women, and having men in our lives that encourage that, and that we can legitimately, honestly, and here was a dirty word for me, surrender to.
I love it.
I was going to.
Another word that we own it, if we can own it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're more complete women, I believe, when we can surrender. And, of course, that's essential for sexual pleasure, too.
And that's where the orgasms come from.
That's where they do.
The pleasure of any type, you know, whether it's sexual or non-sexual, it's that consciousness to say, I release to this. I'm looking forward to it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's talk some about orgasm. I think it's a favorite topic. I don't think I've discussed it enough on this program in the last 4 years plus. Anise Nin, we both know who she is, from the 1920s. She was a woman really ahead of her time. I love her quote, "Electric flesh arrows traversing the body. A rainbow of color strikes the eyelids. A foam of music falls over the ears. It is the gong of orgasm. Mm. It's very,
oh, great.
Very
and
poetic.
It, you know, I can feel that as she speaks of it.
Yes.
And the release that comes in the yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So
I kind of liken it to a menopausal hot flash. You know, if you're get good at them, at channeling them, you know they're coming, and you know where they're going to hit you. So.
So the reframe on the hot flash is it's a power surge, right?
Yep. Yep. It's like an orgasm. Just,
yes.
You know, lean into it.
So you mentioned that I was pretty good with research, and that's part of my job, really. And so there are a lot of studies about orgasm, but in 2001, there was a global study, 30 countries of sexual behavior with over 27,000 participants, and it revealed that orgasmic dysfunction is more the norm than the exception. One-third of all women have never experienced an orgasm, and the second third rarely experience orgasm. Now, that was 2001. Hopefully, it's improved in the last 12 years or so. But isn't that amazing, Fiona?
Well, it not only are the numbers staggering, and I'm going to be brutal here, but it also explains why women can be so angry. Because if we're not living in our pleasure and we're having to shut down that piece of us that just knows how to release and that can, as you say, that can be taught. I mean, I had to relearn it completely. I had to, A, be willing to understand that it's a huge portion of it was my mental ability to be able to let go, you know, and to not nitpick and to go looking for pleasure of both sexual and non-sexual. And so, as we've all affectionately said, you know, a woman's orgasm begins between her ears.
Mm-hmm.
And foreplay is anything that and everything that happens to her through, you know, the course of her day. So
and 24 hours ahead, even.
Yes. And the guy can make use of that by really, you know, learning to cherish and adore his woman. And a woman has to know how to cherish and adore herself. So the fact that we're not having orgasms, as if your stats and things like that, means that we're unfortunately not tapping into that piece, which it's a shame because it's right there for us. It's such a power surge, as you just said.
I will counsel my clients, especially my women, to practice emotional surrender by reminding herself of what she is especially grateful for in her lover, and to breathe, to relax, to stretch, to surrender. I love that word.
And to laugh.
Yeah, I mean, to laugh. But to surrender what is truly sweet and good in herself, and be playful and expressive. Laugh. Yeah, laugh. Yeah.
And to figure out what words work, I think, because I had to really get the hang of words for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Being an engineer, you know, I had a great vocabulary, but I didn't really know how to speak without pointing fingers, maybe. And so, you know, when I point a finger, there's three fingers pointing back at me. If I'm wagging my finger at somebody else, there's three fingers back. And so it's something about me. And so learning to just be gentle with myself as I got used to the words of pleasure and the desire to tap into anything and everything that might give me that little plateau, that little hint of it, so that I'm closer and closer, that when I'm looking for the desire, and didn't you say quite often women don't know that they're aroused? I might get that wrong.
Yeah, women, when we were doing the pre-interview, it was that oftentimes women have to be aroused before they can feel the desire.
Exactly.
Usually it goes desire, arousal, orgasm, but for so many women, they have to really feel stimulated and aroused before they can. And of course, they need to be aroused to experience orgasm. It is indeed the synergy of mind, body, and spirit. So, Fiona, Fine, and I will continue this discussion. We're going to go to the half past the hour break, and when we come back, we're going to talk even more about orgasms, because orgasms deserve lots of discussion, and also the fountain of youth. We're sure on the same page there, Fiona. And we'll also discuss pleasure and permission and what Fiona's going to do next on her journey. We're going to save some of her really important stuff that you can get if you go to the website babeintotalcontrolofherself.com, and she'll send you a free copy of the book. I hope I'm saying that right.
You are. We've got it up there in a format that they can get it directly to themselves. Yes.
Okay, good. I'll put that, when I do the summary of the show, I'll put that up there too, so people that have archived the show can also get it. And good. So we'll continue this I think it's a fascinating discussion. I hope you all feel that same way too. So stay with us, and we'll be right back. Well, I'm not hearing the music. Now I am. Okay. Good. We are back. And Fiona Fine and I are discussing orgasms just before the break. And here's another quote that I really like. Simone de Beauvoir. You're Canadian, so I probably fractured the French.
No, you did great.
Oh, thank you.
You did great.
She said, sexual pleasure in women is a kind of magic spell. It demands complete abandon. If words or movements oppose the magic of caresses, the spell is broken. Yeah, sometimes we women multitask because we've got so much to do, and when we're being sexual, and we have a bigger corpus callosum, which is the connecting tissue between the right and left hemispheres. Because if we're having sex and we have a baby, we have to be able to hear the baby. But even women without babies are often multitasking, and that is not helpful for reaching orgasm and having a lot of sexual pleasure.
I knew one woman who said that she was talking, and she shared, I don't know if she realized what she was quite sharing, but she said, you know what, he hasn't had it in a while, and he's going to want it, and I'll have to figure out which night it's going to work. And I went, wow, we're scheduling our sex.
Yeah.
As opposed to we're looking at what is going to give us pleasure, and sex is the byproduct, and orgasm is the deliciousness part of it.
But the high that you can't have in any other way, really.
Mm-mm. No.
And we're going to talk about the fountain of youth, but it certainly plays in to the fountain of youth. But scheduling sex, as a sex therapist, I do sometimes ask clients to schedule sex because I talk about the TTFS syndrome, which is too tired for sex syndrome, and the the DINS syndrome, which is double income, no sex syndrome.
So
sometimes sex needs to be put on the calendar, and within that plan there can be a lot of spontaneity and fun. And maybe the sexual encounter is preceded by a romantic dinner out without eating too much food, because then too much blood is involved with digesting the food rather than going to the genitals for blood flow. So sometimes I think sex does need to be scheduled, but it should also be spontaneous at other times, and really just with the mindset that it can be fun.
Yeah. If women are rheostats, I always say to my guys, over the years, you can never let a woman go cold. Because getting us back up to temperature is where it gets really complicated. And it's the orgasms and that, what we were talking about, the fountain of youth, where is our youthfulness? Where is our energy? Where is our, wild abandon, even if it's only for like an hour?
And exactly. And I want to talk a little bit about breathing, because arousal is expressed through our breathing. And I've often found that couples, not just women, but men too, they're often quiet during sexual relations. They're very quiet and they don't breathe enough. So I encourage mm-hmm. them to fake it till they make it, breathe more deeply, and become aware of the breath. And then I also sometimes say, try changing your breathing pattern and see how it transforms the experience. And even sometimes it's sort of tantra-like, but making an agreement with your partner to synchronize your breathing and movement can be a remarkably simple step, which can have a profound effect, impact on mm-hmm. lovemaking. Have you heard, Fiona, have you heard of just a minute. I'm having a blonde moment. Oh, Annie Sprinkle. Have you heard of her?
I heard the name.
Well, she is really outrageous and has done individual sex shows for years. And about 20 years ago, when I was living in Palo Alto, California, I went up to San Francisco. She was running a Learning Annex seminar for only women, how to bring out the goddess within. And there were about 60 of us in this Learning Annex seminar. And so toward the end, she had us all breathing. She said how as you experience arousal, you're breathing. So we're all going, and louder and louder. We're all doing this in the room. We're all giggling,
too. Did you feel the energy? I mean, it doesn't necessarily come just, you know, with your partner. If you're all in sync, would the energy not build, even if you're a bunch of women?
Absolutely. But here's the funny...
to yourself.
Here's the funny ending to the story. And this was at a Holiday Inn in a big room, rectangular room, and we did not know this, but on the other side of the entrance to the room was a bar. And so when we came out, there were all these men just standing outside the doors wondering what was happening in this room.
Standing ovation.
Yeah. It was funny. But breathing can be really, really important for increasing arousal. And I do think that discovering pleasure together is like pouring cement into a foundation, because physical touch that leads to a static release not only releases hormones and endorphins that promote health and longevity, but also serve as a basis for biological bonding. So this is a pretty good segue into the Fountain of Youth. How do you address it in your book, The Fountain of Youth?
A piece that's coming up more and more for me, that the Fountain of Youth is something I've been living, and because, you know, as I invoke more and more of this in my life, and I'm encouraging more women to live this way, we are, by actually having the orgasms and learning the pleasure, be it, as I said, sexual or non-sexual, you know, if it's self-pleasuring, learning to play with that and to laugh and to, you know, sort of make a mess type of thing and to find our voice. I'm seeing literally the years drop away from women who have been uptight and tightly wound and, you know, energetically off. And I swear, you know, it is. Orgasming is the fountain of youth. It is, and it can be orgasming sexually and non-sexually. I keep going back to that because we keep thinking it is always just of that, you know, I've got to go over that edge and I've got to crash and it's got to happen. And even the climaxes and the building and everything like that. But to me, the fountain of youth is orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
And you can look at certain older women who honestly look, some of them look like dried up apricots. And we just know that they're not having sex anymore.
Yep. There's no glow. There's no giggle. Mm-hmm. There's no joy. There's a surrender. Any of those words, we forfeited them somehow.
Forfeited, yeah. Because with orgasm, you get endorphins and oxytocin and dopamine and all of these things are just so good for your longevity and your health. It's just pretty mm-hmm. amazing.
And I don't think it matters how long it is. I mean, I know that, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. it can be 4 minutes or, you know, it can be an hour of pleasure. Mm-hmm. It's the enjoyment factor of, okay, this is what's happening and, you know, sort of sliding in and wiggling around with it and playing with it and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is, I mean, that's what youth is about, right? We send our kids out to play and they make mud pies and sandboxes and all sorts of things. They play. And that is where orgasm starts.
Absolutely. Play. So many people get into the idea, especially men with performance anxiety, well, we have a job to do here. Mm-hmm. So this sexual performance is anxiety producing and the play goes out the window. Ideally, we should be very playful with sex, and sex should ideally not have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Just play.
Mm.
The old English word for silly was seleg, and the original word meant to be happy and healthy and blessed and prosperous. It didn't mean ridiculous. So silliness, if you're silly in sex, you can actually be more of all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Actually, sometimes getting really graphic, sometimes I like to play tic-tac-toe with semen that's on my belly.
Oh, that's good.
It always, you know, it is just, it's ridiculous, but it is just, it's a game to enjoy it, you know.
Yeah. No, that's not being graphic. That's, that shows play. So you do talk in your book more about pleasure and permission, and you say that pleasure is our birthright. Hear, hear.
Hmm.
And pleasure isn't just about, and you say this too, it isn't just about sexual pleasure. I think it's about pleasure of all kinds. You know, the root of unhappiness really is pleasure resistance. So,
and I think society has a lot still to answer about that.
I agree.
I think pleasure is getting a really dirty rap. You know, I hear people that say that, you know, if you're looking and if you're keeping, you know, attuned to pleasure, you're selfish and maybe even narcissistic and self-centered and it's mm-hmm. not about other people. And I'm going to go right back to I have to be of my own self before I can reach out really well and nurture children and build communities and, you know, be all that I can be as an individual. And I really tell my women that really we want to really start to tap in, to tune in, and therefore we can turn on, and we turn on everybody. That is the joy of being a woman. When we are turned on, you know, everybody around us is happier.
That is so true. And people start paying attention and noticing. This is especially useful. I can say this quite honestly as an older woman. I have not become invisible. And my fiancé said, even just last night when we were talking, he said, oh, because I was telling him about three different experiences I'd had that day. And I said they were kind of like mitzvahs, and they were powerful. He said, oh, you're a mitzvah magnet. And I thought that was great. For those of you who
and
don't know what a mitzvah
said,
is.
Yes, I am.
Yes. But, you know, I'm happy. I'm smiling. I'm reaching out to people. I'm engaging them in conversation. And of course, a mitzvah is a good deed without any expectation of return. But you do actually get something back.
Yeah.
But
wouldn't you say it's contagious?
Oh, sure.
I mean,
absolutely.
Just, you know, it's like flirting and things like that. When I'm teaching women to flirt, it's like you're going to brighten up everybody's life. And you know, you walk by and you think, wow, life is good, and you know, opportunities open up because attitude is so much of how we live and receive in life.
Yes, it is, and it's unfortunate that sexual energy can be for some terrifying because of the history of shame. Mm-hmm. Because sexual energy is powerful, it's hypnotic. It as we've already touched on it, it helps with longevity and real quality of life as we age.
Mm-hmm.
If we're being sexual and having orgasms, and lots of them. It was very nice.
And who was the woman that swore when she was in the UK, she was in the UK magazine, and somebody said, why do you look so young? And she says, oh, I always have a semen mask, like once every couple of days. And I'm like, okay, go girl.
Really? She said that?
Yeah, she did. That was her facial.
Well, you know, of course, the money shot is famous in porn, but most women don't want to have ejaculate on their face, but I know that Asian prostitutes will use, at least this is what I've read, they will use it as a facial. They'll even put ejaculate in their hair.
Oh.
For conditioner.
All right, one-stop shopping.
That's very good, Fiona.
It's like coconut oil, right? You know, we've got to just need one.
Coconut oil is very good. Yes, it is. Coconut oil.
That's part of that I really noticed. But when I started to, I even gave it to my mother and things like that. And when I work with clients and I start to get them thinking about, you know, you can put it on your body, you can ingest it, it's good in all sorts of pieces. And they start to feel that kind of slippery sliminess. And a bunch of them have reported going, you know what? It was like giving myself my own massage. I was, you know, it wasn't a body lotion. I knew that it was a little bit oilier, and they could sort of knead into themselves, and they started to tap into, you know, their sensuality.
Wonderful. I keep thinking I need to integrate a coconut oil more into my homework assignments for my clients. I have a little bit.
I'd love you to do the research on how it is as a lube.
Oh, it is. It's considered a very good natural lube.
Thank you.
and then I think it would be fun for a couple to put down a rubber sheet and to cover themselves with coconut oil and slide around.
Yes. It's safer than baby oil. It really is. Because baby oil, remember, we used to all, you know, that we used to sunbathe with and everything. And actually, you can use it as a suntan, not quite a protectant, but it keeps the skin. Really, anyway, it is one-stop shopping, and I guess maybe semen is right up there, too.
Yeah, one-stop shopping. I like the way you think. That's good. So what is next for you on your bitch journey? So again, bitch is the acronym for babe in total control of herself, and by going to babeintotalcontrolofherself.com, you can ask for a free copy of her book, and it's a wonderful book. So what's next for you, Fiona?
I've been asked to create what is going to affectionately become a year to becoming a bitch. When I formed the company Goddess Connections, which owns two women's magazines, two digital women's publications, one was in the dating advice side of things, and one has been on the women's leadership. And it advocates for women leaders of all walks of life. And there's a tremendous amount of, you know, permission there and communication and everything. And I really wanted to bring both pieces together in a year to becoming a bitch. Women in corporate life are called that still. We're, you know, bossy and bitchy and things like that. And so being able to take it not just from our personal lives, but to take that as fun and to be able to take, you know, there's five major categories that we'll be focusing on. But the business side of things is a big piece of it. Obviously, family, relationships, sex, always sex in my life, and the health. those are the five categories that we're going to really look at. How do we integrate? What are exercises? What are the, you know, the top five things? Where are the places to go to get more support? So it'll be a podcasting and video series that will be released so that it can be integrated, not just the theory, but that I'm working with experts so that we're actually giving hardcore tools and you know, deliverables that people can actually start to work with. So
that's very exciting, and this is work that needs to be done. We are going, you and I will discuss some other aspects of your book next time about how women self-sabotage, because women do that a lot, and you address it in your book, and then dating and relationships, and you've been a dating coach too. But you're going to integrate all of this to a year to becoming a bitch, right?
Well, so, we are integrated, and
yes,
this is where we, mm-hmm. you know, as women, we're ignoring pieces of ourselves. I've been there. I've done that. You know, my loved ones, my girlfriends have. We're not really totally, and I'm giving up on the word balance, but we're not really harmonizing all of ourselves. And so that really became important to me, and that's why both the publications got started. And mm-hmm. I really would like to draw it together so that, you know, we're being everything that we can be in all the areas, and that we're always looking just for that little 1% a day, not, you know, huge changes and things like that, but just 1% every day. And, you know, you end up going in a whole different direction.
So could you give a concrete example of something that a woman might do, that 1% a day? What might she do to help with her integration?
You know, I'm a big fan, through my own history and car accidents and everything, we just did some media promotion for the Thrive event, which is Arianna Huffington's Thrive book. And
oh, right.
I really enjoyed the book because it brought back a lot of my own history and you know, how the universe had to slap me around to make me pay attention, similar to what Arianna had done. And it took the universe three times to get my attention. So I had three car accidents and blah, blah.
Oh, but, I read about your car accidents. That really was unfortunate. Oh, my goodness.
No, you know
but
what?
But you grew
tough,
from it,
but,
right?
Yes, it was tough. It was not what I would wish. We all have our own messes and our own mm-hmm. challenges and everything. And so I think, you know, when you ask me for that one thing, honestly, being able to breathe, I spent hundreds of dollars learning how to breathe again. And then
wow.
I had to figure out why to breathe. And even now when I bump into things, I have to force myself to go, this is not fun. This is not exciting, this little piece. But if I just breathe with it, and it sounds so corny, but you know, I listened to 2 days of, you know, a lot of experts talking about meditation and breathing and being in the emotion.
In the emotion.
I would have to, yeah, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
I would have to say breathing, you know, that even what you just said about during sex and how it changes it,
mm-hmm.
I'd have to say that one piece, even if it's one deep breath that you might not have taken when the shit hits the fan, and you take that one breath and you go, okay, that was one. Tomorrow I'll try to.
Excellent.
It sounds corny, but breathing
No,
is,
it doesn't.
It's the only way we sustain life.
The only way that we sustain life. So, and I think that pleasure, if we can kind of, I'm going to make a statement that I think overarches a lot of what we've been talking about. That pleasure is a much better place to grow from.
Mm-hmm.
And getting comfortable with pleasure, of course, is a challenge.
It can be. It's messy at
for
first.
Some.
It's mm-hmm. emotionally awkward. It's like mm-hmm. a muscle that hasn't been used in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to come out. It needs to be exercised. And there will be moments when it might twinge back. Mm-hmm. And it might go, oh crap, that did so not work.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to take a deep breath, or, you know, you have to take a deep breath and go, okay, let's try that again. I always say I'll try anything twice just in case the first time was a bad batch.
Good for you. That means you're an optimist. Are you?
A lot of the world. You know, I'm a realist. I really am.
You're a realist.
I like to be a realist.
Yeah.
I think that's the engineer in me.
That's the engineer in you. But you're very wise, and this is a wonderful book, and I really encourage my listeners, our listeners here, to go to her website.
Our website. Love women as a community to start playing together even more.
Lovely. But before we end, and we have to stop in a minute because they like me to stop a little bit before the top of the hour, how could men benefit from reading this book?
You know what? Anytime, because I've been in a man's world for so long, when I'm talking to the men, my corporate men and everything, and they're like, they usually start off with, oh, my God, why wife needs your book. And I'm like, wow, that is both an endorsement and also you're kind of blaming her. So back off on that a little bit and understand she is doing the best she can.
Mm-hmm.
How do you cherish her uniqueness? How do you adore her physically and stop making it about you? I mean, I would not want to be a man because that's a whole different ballgame. But, and yet, to be able to really understand she is juggling, she is doing the best, and I'm always asked that. How does, like, my guys have been, they know it's queen rules, and so they tap into that. They know that when I am happy, they're going to have a much happier life. So it's paying attention to her, cherishing her uniqueness, adoring her physically. If she likes her feet rubbed, for God's sakes, rub her feet. It sounds so simple, but don't begrudge her that.
Absolutely, because she is the goddess, and if the man worships the goddess, he's going to get plenty of return.
I kneel at the Delta.
So Fiona, thank you so much for being on the program today, Love, Lust, and Laughter. And we're going to talk again on June 10th. And I think it's so useful to come from a place of yes. And that's what you're doing. Yes. I'm going to embrace this, or I'm going to embrace that. But I'm not going to be negative. I'm going to be positive. Yes. Thank you, Fiona.
Thank you.
And we'll talk again on the 10th of June.
I look forward.
Okay, good. Me too. Bye-bye, everybody.